Welcome to The Last Resort, the last place you'd look for legitimate sports opinions. I'm your host, Spenny Harris, joined as always by Philly Brandon. Brandon, how are we tonight?
You know, we're good. I'm fresh off of a negative COVID result, so that's always a morale booster. We got one of my own coming on the pod in just a little bit.
Yeah, so glad to hear about the COVID stuff. Glad you can finally leave your apartment. I know you've been kind of stuck in there for a few days quarantining because you're responsible and that's what you're supposed to do when you get the COVID test. But now you're ready to go have some social distancing fun, huh?
Yeah, man, I don't need that guilt on my hands, you know? Like, I don't want somebody to be like, oh, you know, I thought everybody was safe, and then, you know, my Nana died. I don't need it.
We don't want to kill Nana on this podcast. And
I've killed enough people on this podcast by accident. I'm at three now, I think.
Yeah, you have. It might be more. Sixers are up, by the way. 95-80 against the Hornets. Looks like they're going to get their 16th victory tonight, and I'm saying that because I want to jinx them, and I want them to have an epic collapse for you.
I mean, we're actually due for one because we came back from down 20, and that's just the way the universe works. So I'm waiting for us to get ours. Don't we play each other soon?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. You mentioned it earlier. We have a very special guest coming on the show later, Tim Kelly, who is an editorial director for At Phillies Nation. Huge Phillies guy. If you're a baseball fan, I don't really think there's anyone out there who knows more about this baseball team than Tim Kelly. He is joining the show to talk Phillies baseball with Brandon. We have a very cool top five this week, our top five iconic movie songs. But first, let's start with like a legitimate 3 to 5 minute conversation about this Super Bowl coming up on Sunday, Brandon. The Chiefs are 3-point favorites against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Who do you like and why?
Man, so I like the Chiefs and I'm going to stick with them, but God, it's so hard to bet against Tom Brady right now. Like, I mean, they went into the Green Bay Packers team that was just firing on all cylinders, and the Bucs defense, really freaking good, and then Tom Brady, it just remembered how to beat Tom Brady in the playoffs.
So I'm going to agree with you, and I am scared of betting against Brady, but the thing I will say is in that Green Bay-Tampa game, Brady wasn't elite. I mean, he had three interceptions. They scored enough, but obviously that huge defensive breakdown by Scott Miller before halftime was like a game changer. The Aaron Jones fumble that like gave Brady a short field, and again, the Buccaneers defense has been balling. So I personally, and again, Mahomes hasn't shown any weakness all playoffs. This season he has, yeah, but he came back against the Bills and he looked like Patrick Mahomes. It's Tyreek Hill, it's Travis Kelce, it's Pat Mahomes, the three best players at their position right now. I can't bet against the Chiefs. I like the Chiefs -3.
Yeah, they're just too good. And I know Brady didn't have a great game by any means. I mean, three picks for him in the playoffs is, I mean, he probably didn't sleep for 2 days. But just the fact that if you give him more than a minute, you're just sweating the whole time because you know he's going to do it to you. So what I'm saying is that the Chiefs are going to win this ball game. Brady needs to get the ball back at the end down at least 2 scores.
I think we both like Mahomes, but we're not crazy sure about it.
Yeah, I like him, but he's not the one that's stopping Brady. I worry about KC's defense slowing him down.
All right, I rarely like to pat myself on the back, Brandon, but something fucking crazy happened over the past 2 days, and I think I'd be stupid not to bring it up on this podcast during this segment about the Super Bowl. I actually got to interview several players on both teams and ask questions to them. The Last Resort, the last place you'd look for legitimate sports opinions, had media coverage at Super Bowl Media Day 2 days out of the three thus far. Tomorrow is Thursday and it is the last day of media, I think, or the second to last. So we'll see who else I talk to. But so far, I've talked to 4 Chiefs players, 2 Buccaneers, Ronald Jones being one of the Buccaneers, Antoine Winfield Jr., and then the Chiefs. I talked to Mecole Hardman, Alex Okafor. Oh God, now I can't remember the other two guys. Oh, Damian Wilson, and then Tano. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, the defensive end. And I talked to Tyler Johnson, was the other player on the Bucs. So really cool few days. Posted all the clips on The Last Resort. Of course, like, I asked a few boring football questions. I asked some really stupid, nonsensical questions that I thought were really funny. And that happened.
Yeah, TLR is in the room. I mean, nobody expected to see us there, but we snuck our way in anyway.
Shout out to the NFL and NFL Network for letting me ask questions. And shout out to Sideline Sports for the assist. They covered the Super Bowl as well, and they helped me kind of get my foot in the door there. So shout out Sideline Sports. Okay, moving on. This Mahomes versus Brady matchup. When was the last time you were this excited for a quarterback versus quarterback matchup?
I mean, for me, that's an easy question because, like, I had my own little David and Goliath thing play out in real life.
With the exception of Big Dick Foles versus Tim Brady.
Oh, okay.
Just because it's biased, dude. I can say Eli Manning and Tom Brady, but, like, that's not really a good QB matchup on paper.
No, I guess, yeah, it's not on paper. I mean, it was kind of cool with, like, you know, this awkward little, like, country-ass dude and Tom Brady. God, I'm trying to think when the last time two great quarterbacks like this met. I think that's part of the point, is that it hasn't happened that often. Like, that's why this one's so crazy.
What's very funny is the last time I can remember two quarterbacks that were, like, sort of equally matched, it was Joe Flacco and Colin Kaepernick. And I don't mean that as a diss to either of those guys, because at that time in their careers, both guys were flat-out balling. And I remember they came in, and it was like, okay, like, Flacco has thrown, like, a gajillion touchdowns, no interceptions. Kaepernick is that next quarterback, the dual threat. He can pass, he can throw. Both teams had solid defenses that year. Like, that was the last time, because, you know, we've had Jared Goff and Tom Brady. We've had Jimmy Garoppolo and Tom Brady. It was Jimmy Garoppolo, Patrick Mahomes, I'm sorry. And, you know, Tom Brady versus Matt Ryan. Like, these Tom Brady's in every single other sentence.
I know.
These matchups just haven't been cool, because who's better than Tom Brady?
This is the first time we could question and go, you know what, maybe this guy.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
I think a few years ago, if the Saints had made it, you could have that question. You know, Breeze in his prime, Brady in his prime, they could duke it out, but that didn't happen, and this did.
Speaking of Breeze, I saw something that he's not 100% like willing to commit to retirement. If he comes back, dude, that would kind of fuck the Saints over, because Sean Payton has given Jameis Winston the stamp of approval. He's like, I want him to resign, or I want him here in the long term. I don't know. It would be
you
weird.
You got to know when to hang it up. I mean, yeah. Your Brett Favre had the same mistake. I mean, those years at the Jets, like, oh, my God.
I mean, he played for the Vikings after that.
Yeah, but he was good with the Vikings.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. Like,
I guess what I'm saying is, like, that was his last step, was the Jets. That was, everyone told him to go home, and he didn't. Everyone's telling Drew Brees to go home.
What did you think of this COVID-19 story, where the barber that a lot of players get their haircut from got COVID-19, and in the middle of a haircut, I think with like the center or something, he told him, and he immediately, I forgot what I guess he left or something, and then the guy quarantined. But what did you think of that story? And I know I'm missing some details, so if you could please fill me in.
I haven't, and I don't know any more than you do. Okay. But we're not doing favorite tweet of the week, but I'm going to insert that here, because Mina Kimes, one of my favorite follows on Twitter, and she hates the end of game goal line fade. So she dropped that in today, and she was like, and the last minute fade fails yet again. And it was just beautiful.
So here's the line. Backup center Daniel Kilgore was in the chair when the Chiefs pulled the barber once his COVID-19 test results came in. So, like, I guess a bunch of guys in hazmat suits just came into the room, grabbed the barber, and that was that.
Yeah, I'm picturing, like, Monsters, Inc. with, like, you know, they got 23-19.
Right, before we move on, I just wanted to know, you know, these teams, it's weird. On paper, they both have a lot of great weapons. Let's start with the receiving core. Which receiving core would you rather have? Tariq Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, all those guys. Or Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Tyler Johnson, Scott Miller, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski, Cameron Brate.
I think the Bucs are deeper. I don't think their number one is better than, you know, the Chiefs' number one or anything like that. Their tight ends certainly are better. But there's something about just having more good players than Tyreek Hill, who's great, and then some serviceable guys. Well, Travis Kelce is also great.
I would agree with you, and I'd also give you the scenario where, you know, put a Tom Brady-like quarterback on each team, and I think you get slight – because Mahomes is different, right? He's a different breed. So yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is if you put Mahomes in Tampa Bay, I think those guys' production would skyrocket. Brady had a great season, but Brady is not putting up Patrick Mahomes numbers.
No, and they asked Tom Brady about that. That was never his MO. He was right. Always don't lose because of me and just win however it happens. Whereas Mahomes has always been, I'm going to do superhuman things and make sure we win.
Which team has the better running game? If you're the Chiefs, you have Edwards-Helaire, Le'Veon Bell, Darrell Williams. And if you're the Bucks, you have Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, and LeSean McCoy. And Keyshawn Vaughn.
I think it's the Bucks again because of the existence of playoff Lenny.
Playoff, he's been great.
Leonard Fournette is a freight train in the playoffs. We don't have Derrick Henry this year, but man, we have the next closest thing.
Ronald Jones will be eating some steak and mashed potatoes the night before the game. Sources confirm that because that source is me.
He's been great too. I mean, but Leonard Fournette in the playoffs has ascended to a different level.
All right, that does it for my Super Bowl points. Did you have anything to add to the SB conversation?
Where are you watching Super Bowl?
It's a good question. So I watched the last like few Sundays at my pops' house with my dad, and I was like going to watch the Super Bowl with a friend or two, and my dad's like, hey, you want to watch the Super Bowl Sunday? He kind of gave me that like come watch with me thing, and I love my dad, and obviously like, you know, he doesn't want to leave my mom. They're not going to a party. So I said, yeah, fuck it, I'll come by. So I'm going to watch my dad. I'll probably eat some good food. What about yourself?
I'll be back on campus, thankfully, so we're going to have some of the neighbors over and barbecue some wings and drink a couple gallons of beer.
Nice, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, my dad, who's a huge foodie, he's only eating fish and vegetables right now. So, yeah, it's a little bit tough for me because I want to chow down on some pizza and chicken wings. Well, yeah, I mean, I'll have to, but I also feel like a fatso eating it in front of my vegetarian father.
Well, that's the beauty of the pizza box, though. If you fold that thing up, you got a wall where you can shame eat without him being able to see you.
All right, let's move on to some quick NBA updates. So I like this game. I say a sentence, and you react to it. You ready?
Sure.
All right, the Nets are back.
I mean, yeah, defense isn't back, but the Nets are back.
Listen, they lost to the Wizards in one of the most epic collapses in an NBA game in the last 20 years. They came back and they beat the hottest team in the league in the Clippers. The Nets are back. All right. Steph Curry is maybe the best point guard in the game right now.
Steph Curry's always been really good at basketball. People forgot for a week or two. I don't know why, but he's been on a mission since then. He took that personally.
The fact that the Warriors are 500 with him is absolutely insane.
It is all him. I don't want to hear anybody. Kelly Oubre has been a ghost.
Yeah. Ugh, they have a guy named Toscano who's not very good. And then, like,
Draymond Green's not great anymore.
No, but he needs three or four elite players next to him. He needs Clay. He needs, like, him passing to Kelly Oubre and Oubre just bricking a corner three doesn't make Draymond look good. All right, the Fred VanVleet three-point show was on the other night. 54 points. He made, I think, 11 three-pointers. Pretty good night for him.
I absolutely love Father Fred. Like, undrafted free agent, kind of had to work his way through. Like, he was third on the depth chart, came in sporadically, sixth man, and now he's the best guard on that team. And I know Kyle Lowry didn't die, but I said what I said.
Did you hear or see what DeMar DeRozan tweeted?
Something about Kyrie, you know, something about Kyle Lowry couldn't do it or old head couldn't do it or some shit like that.
Yeah, he basically called Kyle Lowry old. He's like, his old ass could. Oh, here you go. Congrats to my brother, Freddie V. Kyle, old ass, couldn't do it. Glad you did, champ. Been telling you. Which is kind of funny because, you know, he's boys with all them.
Yeah, I mean, he is better than Kyle Lowry.
All right, the Utah Jazz are in first place in the Western Conference right now. Shocked?
Enjoy it while it lasts.
And the 76ers are in first place in the Eastern Conference. Brandon, are you shocked?
We're here to stay. Yes, I'm shocked.
Yeah, I think that's going to be handed over to the Nets, back to the Bucks, back to the Sixers. Maybe the Celtics will jump in there. There is no team in the Eastern Conference right now that is playing great all-around basketball.
I don't know. We don't have a whole lot of weaknesses. I mean, we can't score like you, but, man, we play a lot better defense. And we score enough, by the way.
Listen, we're 1-0 against you, Brandon. So I don't want to hear it until we play again. I know you guys didn't have Seth Curry. But
which
I don't think
kind of matters.
I don't know. Dude, I don't think we had any of our stars for that game. That was a Caris LeVert, Jared Allen-led Nets team, which is fucking crazy, by the way, because the two guys that beat you aren't even on the team anymore.
Was that the game where you guys took out the whole roster? I think we kept getting infected. That was after
No. But you still had Simmons, Embiid, and Maxey. I think the only guy you really did, you still had Tobias Harris. Bro, most of your squad was there. It was not player game.
I think we played that game. I'm saying I think we got our infections in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We because we win the long battle.
Yeah. You gave us smallpox blankets to send us on our way.
Exactly. All right, that does it for NBA updates. Let's get to our interview with Tim Kelly. He's an editorial director for @PhilliesNation. He is the Phillies expert. Here he is. All right, we welcome onto the show editorial director at Phillies Nation, Tim Kelly. Tim, welcome to The Last Resort, man. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've been looking to get a Phillies guy in here, especially recently with the team kind of turning around. It was looking pretty cheap for a while. You know, ownership wasn't talking about bringing a lot of the guys back. And then in the last 10 days, we got Real Muto back. Just off the bat, how big is that for the team and just the morale around the Phillies right now?
Yeah, it's obviously huge. I think it makes you look forward to the season. JT Realmuto is the best catcher in the sport right now. We'll see how that contract ultimately ages, but certainly in the short term, there was just no way you were going to be a better team without JT Realmuto in the fold.
Especially when you figure the guy you just spent, you know, $330 million on is like hardly advocating to bring him back. You don't usually want to piss off your star players, you know?
Yeah, especially when they have 11 years left on their deal and a no-trade clause, and they're probably here regardless. You don't want to start going down that path.
No, not at all. And it was pretty public that JT was asking for a figure right around $200 million there for a bit. He ended up settling at $115 million, just a tad over the mark that Joe Mauer set a little while ago. Are you surprised with such a dry market for what we all consider to be the best catcher in baseball?
Not particularly, because he's going to be 30 next month, and for as good as JT Realmuto is right now, great as he is right now, catchers tend to have shorter peaks. I also think his team, whether it was $200 million or something like that, they overplayed their hand at the beginning of the offseason, and that maybe cost them potential suitors like the Mets. So I'm not especially surprised. I thought he would get closer to 130 than 115. But I never thought it was going to be anything like $200 million.
I don't think it would be in the Phillies' best interest at $200 million anymore. I mean, that cuts you really thin on building out the staff, which we all know we need. You can't bring Didi back for that kind of money.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there had to be a cutoff point with JT Realmuto, and I would imagine the Phillies had a cutoff point, whatever that was. And fortunately for them, it didn't end up having to come into play because there really wasn't a second team that appears to have been a legitimate contender for JT Realmuto.
No, not that I was. I mean, the end of the Mets we were a little bit afraid of, but once they got their guy, there didn't seem to be anybody else pop up. But before these recent 10 days, I mean, we all heard Phillies ownership saying that they were going to tighten the belt. You know, the pandemic cost them too much money. They said without saying it, they said they couldn't be competitive this year. They couldn't bring these guys back. And then they bring in Dombrowski, and then in the flurry of moves, you bring JT back on a relatively big contract at 115, and then you go out and bring Didi back, which wasn't looking likely. We're looking at another one-year rental on shortstop. So what do you think changed so rapidly for them?
It's a good question, because I think in September, October, the Phillies really were in a situation where they were kind of bracing the public for the possibility that this wouldn't work out. The biggest thing is probably that the Mets didn't end up being a serious player for JT Realmuto. That helps. But in terms of them being willing to spend, obviously whatever Dave Dombrowski did when he came in there helped for that. And maybe the Phillies have a sense, or a clearer sense now, of how many fans they'll be able to have in attendance this season, different ways they'll be able to make money. I mean, make no mistake, the Phillies could have afforded regardless. I mean, every major league team is owned by a billionaire. Let's not kid around here. But in a less idealistic world, certainly it did seem at the beginning of offseason that the Phillies were not going to spend as much as they ultimately have this offseason, where they're at the point now where they're one of the, for the third or fourth straight offseason, one of the most active teams.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, you know, you're at the games, you're in the city. I live just outside the city myself. Phillies fans probably wouldn't have come back for quite a while, I think, if ownership blatantly cheated them out of a competitive team. I mean, there's not a whole lot of things that we absolutely won't accept, but I think not putting a competitive team out there is one of the things that Philly has proven not to really support. So do you think there was anything anywhere they were maybe bullied into it a little bit, or they were worried about losing the fan base like the Sixers almost did for a bit?
I don't know if they would have lost the fan base in terms of people coming to games in the summer. And ultimately, they're going to have to win with JT Realmuto, which they haven't to this point, or fans are going to be upset regardless. But yeah, you don't want to have a battle with the fan base or the court of public opinion where it seems like you're not putting your best foot forward. And the reality is, prior to this offseason, it hasn't worked, but the Phillies certainly have not been cheap the last few off seasons with Harper, McCutcheon, Jake Arrieta, Carlos Santana. They've issued a lot of big deals, so it's not as though they've been cheap. There were maybe some signals at the beginning of the offseason that they wouldn't spend as much, but ultimately they have. So spending and being willing to spend has certainly not been the Phillies' problem.
No, spending certainly hasn't. I wish a few of those guys might have been a little more savvy of a pick, considering how few of them remain with us. But that just seems to be a problem in Philly in general, you know, a la Howie Roseman right across the way.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Ultimately, you got a good deal with Zach Wheeler, it appears. Bryce Harper, it's probably not going to be great at the end, but 6 or 7 years of that, you hope, are elite production. And Andrew McCutcheon still kind of hangs in the air, I would say.
Somebody who kind of got lost in the fray with, you know, filling out the pitching staff and, of course, bringing JT back was Didi Gregorius at short. I know for a while there we were looking at Simmons as just kind of a stopgap. But how big of an upgrade do you think Didi is versus the field that we had left available to us?
Offensively and in terms of power production, I think a lot. Defensively, I think he's a downgrade to Andrelton Simmons. I think he's average or below average, and Andrelton Simmons is one of the best fielding shortstops the game has ever seen. Marcus Semien was also out there, a very good fielder that's had kind of an inconsistent track record offensively. So I understood the path of potentially going to a one-year deal. They ultimately didn't do that. You have a third baseman in Alec Boehm who's a tremendous hitter, but you're not sure about him defensively. So it would have been nice to have Andrelton Simmons' glove, but it would have come at a cost of not having Didi Gregorius' bat. And I think, all in all, if you said at the beginning of the offseason Didi Gregorius is going to sign a 2-year, $28 million deal, I think most of us would have looked at that and said, that's a fair deal, sign the Phillies up.
Yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of security. I would have been fine bringing Didi back on 1 year if he would have taken it, because a shortstop class next year is a little bit more loaded than this one was this season. But all in all, not a complete and total loss.
Yeah, and I think it's possible if you really want to be a player next offseason for Carlos Correa or Trevor Story or whoever, that you could shift Didi Gregorius to second, or you could shift, or you could trade Didi, or you could trade Gene Segura, whatever the case may be, potentially, and pave the way for a different shortstop. You also have Bryson Stott coming, so I don't think that that's necessarily off the table.
Now, with having a shaky field, you would really like to have just a lockdown pitching staff on the front and back end. And to put it lightly, we don't necessarily have that. Spots 4 and 5 are a question again this year. And the bullpen, we're once again kind of building around veteran flyers. So how are you feeling, like, confidence-wise with this staff this season?
Well, the first two, Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler, are top 15 pitchers in baseball. Aaron Nola is probably a little bit higher than that. So very good there. The Phillies seem very confident that Zach Eflin turned a corner last year. He was very good in a shortened season, so we'll see if that's sustainable. I think that they've done a good job this offseason in terms of adding guys and giving themselves options. They're not banking on Spencer Howard to be perfect. Vince Velasquez is going to be here, but if it doesn't work out, then he'll be in the bullpen or whatever. But you've given yourself 4 or 5 options for those last two spots in the rotation, as opposed to 1 or 2 options for 2 spots. So that's good. As far as the bullpen, I mean, in some senses, someone like Hector Neris, I think, is just – bound to be better, and I believe would have been better over a full season. Advanced numbers show that in a lot of senses, that he was unlucky, but there just wasn't time over a 60-game season for things to balance out. So you hope for a bounce back there. You signed Archie Bradley, and I think Connor Brogdon looked excellent in the last week or two of the season. So there's nowhere to go but up. I don't know if it'll necessarily be a playoff-caliber bullpen, but there's just no possible way. That legitimately, like, we say stuff around here sometimes that it's like, oh, that's the worst bullpen of all time. That legitimately is in the discussion for the worst bullpen of all time. So I don't think it could possibly be like that again.
Yeah, you mentioned my very next topic, and that was, is this team, however expensive as it may be, a playoff team, considering we're in a division where you could realistically say there are four teams that could make, that could A, make the playoffs, and B, probably make a push into the playoffs. So just looking at the roster right now and looking at what Miami, Atlanta, Washington, and the Mets have done, I mean, is this a playoff team?
I think it's a playoff caliber team, and it's certainly a team that's built to be in the playoffs this year. Like, the Marlins were in the playoffs last year, but they weren't necessarily built to be a playoff team last year. Every player the Phillies have, besides Alec Boehm, is a player that's at their, like, height of their powers right now for the most part. So if you're not winning in 2021, then this whole era is going to be seen as a mistake and a failure. So they are in a tough division. I think the Braves are definitely better. I would say on paper the Mets seem better, but it feels that way with the Mets a lot, and we've kind of seen the Mets continue to look dysfunctional this offseason and make extremely poor personnel choices. So I kind of have to see it to believe it, that things are changed under Steve Cohen with the Mets. The Marlins are, I think they'll probably take a step back this year, but they're a team with a ton of pitching. The Nationals, I don't know if they have enough offense around Trey Turner and Juan Soto, but they're a very good team still. So you have a division where you have five teams that are legitimately trying to win right now, and it might be the only division in the sport where you can say that. So the Phillies have their work cut out, and this is going to have to be, especially if it goes back, which I'm hoping it goes back to only five teams in the playoffs, you're going to need 90 wins to get in.
If you had to pick, let's just say in a fantasy world that three of those teams do find their way in somehow, some way, if you had to pick two teams you aren't going to get in, who gets left out in the NFC East?
In the NL East?
Well, the NL East.
Yeah. Probably the Marlins and the Nationals, if I had to say. But it wouldn't shock me. I would be shocked if the Braves don't make the playoffs. Any of the other four, I wouldn't be shocked if it goes one way or the other.
All right. That's all we had as far as the formal questions. This is about the quietest Spence has been for the longest amount of time since I've met him. So I'm going to let Spence take over and knock out the rapid fire here.
Listen, Brandon, his nickname is Philly Brandon. So obviously I'm going to let him control the Philadelphia Phillies interview. But yeah, we're at my segment, rapid fire. I'm going to give you 10 questions. Give me the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number one, most beloved Philly of all time.
Probably Chase Utley.
Number two, most hated Philly of all time.
The vitriol that I still see for Scott Rolen from some people, but I'll probably say Jonathan Papelbon, although I don't necessarily think it's earned, but in recent memory, I would say that.
That's the guy I had in mind when I was writing those.
Better parade, 08 Phils or 2017 Birds?
I actually wasn't at the 08 parade. I was at the 2017 parade. And as much as I'm more of a baseball guy, this is a football first city. So I'm going to say the Eagles.
All right. Better closer, Brad Lidge or Jonathan Papelbon?
Oh, it's not even close. It's Jonathan Papelbon. Better Philly, better closer. I like Brad Lidge. I've interviewed him multiple times. He's a nice guy, but it's not even close.
Number five, if you had to spend a weekend with one former manager from the Phillies, who is it?
Obviously I know Joe Girardi, but the only ones I know other than that are Larry Bowa and Charlie Manuel. I shouldn't even say I know. I've interviewed each like once or twice. And what I love both about them is that you don't have to ever wonder if they're giving you their honest opinion. They are to the point. I'll say Larry Bowa, but Charlie Manuel would be fun too.
Number six, favorite style of Phillies uniform?
I like the throwback 1960s ones with the like kind of cartoonish looking P, the WizKid era Phillies. Those are my favorite ones.
Those sound pretty fresh. Number seven, is Reese Hoskins actually good at baseball?
Yeah, Reese Hoskins is a really productive offensive player. I think he'd probably be better geared to be a DH than play a position, but at the very least, he walks. And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but if you go through last year, the Phillies really took a dip in the games that he didn't play. So it may end up being Alec Boehm needs to play first base and it doesn't work out here, but Reese Hoskins is a really good first baseman and he's one of the two or three most respected people on the team, and that's why he's the one constantly out to the public doing interviews and things of that nature.
Number eight, the best item on the menu to get when you're at Citizens Bank Park.
Yeah, that's the thing. What, like, obviously fans weren't there last year, but they didn't have food there for anyone last year, so I missed that. Probably Bulls Barbecue.
Ooh, yeah.
But I like Shake Shack, too. That was a good addition. But that's not, like, unique to the stadium. So.
No, yeah, I got you. That's not your classic ballpark food.
Number nine, it's July. It's a day game at Citizens Bank Park. What is your beer of choice?
Well, I can't drink at the park because I'm working when I'm there.
Trick question. He got it right. Good for you.
No, I'm trying to think what the brand that makes Sour Monkey is. They have like a few, and there's like a golden one too. I forget, but they're.
I think that's is that Victory.
Yeah, Victory. I couldn't think of it. Victory has a bunch of different. Yeah, it is. That's and I know for a fact they have it at Citizens Bank Park. So I'll go with Victory.
Number 10. The Philadelphia Phillies call you. They say they need you, Tim Kelly, to be the Fanatic for one day. What is your answer?
No. I cannot possibly do that, nor do I, unless they're like having, after COVID, like I'm going to become a germaphobe, and I'm not going into a suit that someone else has occupied for 40 years.
I didn't think about it that way.
All right, that does it for Rapid Fire. Tim, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Where can people find you on social media?
You can find me at Tim Kelly Sports.
All right, and that was Tim Kelly at Phillies Nation. You can follow him on Twitter at Tim Kelly Sports. We thank him for coming on. All right, Brandon, let's get to our top five. This week's top five is the top five iconic movie songs. So you're going to give me five iconic movie songs that you think should be worth noting, and I'm going to give you five of my favorite. Are you ready?
Let's get at it.
All right. My number five is Too Fast, Too Furious by Ludacris. And you can hear this song in the movie Too Fast, Too Furious.
That's my favorite film franchise. I've been watching through it, actually, during my quarantine. That's my least favorite one. No, Tokyo Drift is. Then that one.
Bro, those are the classics. I love those movies. I haven't seen one past, like, five.
They get weird. They're like CIA spies. At one point, they're like driving in a lake. It gets kind of weird. My number five is also a driving movie, but this is a true classic. This was Eastbound and Down from Smokey and the Bandit. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but there is a scene where they're running like a bunch of beer from Texas to Florida. There's a Trans Am that's, like, you know, famous, and the whole song is, you know, there's, a country guy singing, like, Eastbound and Down, and it is a super famous song, super famous movie.
Is that Burt Reynolds?
Yes, sir.
Never saw it.
Really good. Recommend.
I know it's Burt Reynolds for some reason. All right, my number four, it's a song that's very significant in two movies. It's There Goes My Hero by the Foo Fighters. It's in The Other Guys.
What it's known for. It can appear in every other movie. I don't care. It's when they're jumping off the building.
Yep. Dwayne and Sam Jackson aim for the bushes. Boom. Fall to their death from like a 50-foot story building. And
there were no bushes even in Scream, by the way. That's the best part.
And also, I don't know. Have you ever seen Not Another Teen Movie?
No.
Oh, Brandon. Classic movie. There's a football scene where the quarterback throws it to the worst player on the team, and There Goes My Hero is playing, and he catches it, and as he catches it, two players tackle him at the same time. One tackles his upper half, ripping his body from his diaphragm off. The other tackles his lower half, and he splits in two.
Okay, so it's not a live-action movie. Good to know.
It is not. But, like, it's the same concept. Like, there goes my hero, and then something absolutely horrible happens, which is very funny for some reason. Yeah. That's my number four.
An underrated line in that other guy's scene is the immediate after scene when they're talking to Will Ferrell and he goes, there wasn't even a balcony in the direction. Like, he whispers it, but it makes it so much better. All right, so my number four is Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins, and that's in Top Gun. Just such a... that's just the epitome of cool. I mean, you got Tom Cruise, you got the aviator sunglasses, he's a fighter pilot, he's going into battle, and then just Danger Zone comes on in the background. I mean, oh, yeah, it is just a get hype kind of song.
And it's in Archer.
Yes, yes, yes.
So it's in two things. All right, my number three is Across 110th Street. It's by Bobby Womack, and it's in the movie Jackie Brown, directed by Quentin Tarantino in the very beginning. It is also in American Gangster, when they show the montage of all Denzel Washington's heroin being slang around New York City and in the five boroughs. Epic song, Across 110th Street. Just like phenomenal. Works in both movies. That's my number three.
Ooh. I'd love any good Denzel vehicle. I'll have to check that one out.
You've never seen American Gangster?
No.
Oh, Brandon. I know. Oh, Billy Brandon, dude. That's put that on the top of your watch list. You will thank me later. Trust me.
It is. I'm still working my way through Sopranos.
Where are you at? Let's talk about that.
Oh, I just started it. Okay, so when we get off the pod, I got to send you a picture.
Please do.
The same gathering I thought I got the Rona from my friend, huge Sopranos guy, and we have five guys, and there's a picture with their five guys, and they all match the poses. It's a pretty tough one, but
you're not past the first season?
I have, no, it's literally on my TV, like, I'm going to start a post-podcast.
By the way, I'm on my third rewatch, and I'm in the fifth season, and my girlfriend's watching it with me, she loves it, so we'll talk.
All right. So my number three, I got to keep in character here, it's the Rocky theme song. And it has taken on so many legs just beyond the movies. It's great in the movies, but it became the theme song of an entire city for a fictional man who never really lived here.
So I love that pick. I might be a psychopath, but I work out to that song. Do you?
That, for a while I did, and then I kind of overused it.
Oh, what? You got too old for it, Brandon?
No, it was just my go-to, and it stopped having the same effect. I needed to take a break for a bit.
No, you're right. Like, I probably haven't worked out to Gonna Fly Now in about 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
But I think if I turned it on, I would, you know, get the, cause you know what it is? I think of that scene and I start like pumping my arms on the treadmill and it's like, da da da.
You were in the Northeast for a bit. You've been to a Sox game at Fenway, right?
Yes. Yes, sir.
So, you know, bottom of the eighth when, Shut Up the Boston comes on, you just like, you get that feeling. That's what Rocky is to sports here, and I stopped getting that.
Do you know what Mariano Rivera's walkout song was for
Enter Sandman?
That was essentially the song for New York.
Yeah.
When you heard that song, you know it's like, all right, Moe's coming in, game over.
Yeah, and as much as I personally like Jonathan Papelbon, his was, I think, Hell's Bells or something. That was another one. We were just like, oh, man, it's going to get kind of real.
All right, my number two on this list, it's Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones.
Ooh.
It's in two of my favorite mob movies of all time, The Departed and Goodfellas.
I had a Departed pick, and I'm glad I decided against it.
It's the very beginning of the movie. I mean, Jack Nicholson's talking. He's a shadowy figure. He's talking to child Matt Damon. It also plays later in the movie, I think, when they're showing some of Leonardo DiCaprio's criminal activity or someone in someone in Frank Costello's gang's criminal activity. And then it's also in Goodfellas. Is a whole cocaine thing. I think it's a whole cocaine montage with Ray Liotta, and they're playing that song. So Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones, my number two.
All right, my number two, I went a little reminiscent, and that was Don't You Forget About Me, which plays at the end of The Breakfast Club.
Yes.
When they're walking out, and there's that freeze frame with the fist up in the air, and it just so encapsulates that, like, teen angst movie, like, Don't You Forget About Me, like, all their parents forget, their kids are even, like, people, like, it's just perfect in the film.
Who is your favorite member of The Breakfast Club?
Slater. It's just, you go.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember their names. I remember the movie, was Sean Astin in it?
The only one I remember was Slater, because he's my favorite. The other one was, like, there was, like, the wrestling jock played by Emilio Estevez.
Nope, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Not Sean Astin. It's Emilio Estevez. You're right.
Yeah.
All right, my number one. And then I also have a bonus one, but no one's going to probably know it. My number one is Stuck in the Middle with You. It's by Steeler's Wheel, and it's made famous in the movie Reservoir Dogs because every single time I ever hear this song, I think of Michael Madsen's character cutting off a police officer's ear.
Wow. I don't think that was the original intention when that song was written.
Have you seen Reservoir Dogs?
No.
Quentin Tarantino's first vehicle, or one of his first vehicles, great movie. Watch that movie. You will forever listen to that song and think of that scene. It's like it goes hand in hand. The guy starts dancing to the song as he takes out a knife and starts cutting a dude who's tied to a chair's ears off. I'm sorry, no spoilers on this podcast, but Reservoir Dogs came out in 1992.
What's your favorite Tarantino?
It's a loaded question for me because my favorite's like the unpopular ones. Like my top two would be The Hateful Eight and Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, Hateful Eight, my number one.
I'm sorry. Inglourious Bastards, too. Really? The Hateful Eight's your number one?
I love Westerns that had that Western kind of feel to it.
I think The Hateful Eight's better than Django, and I have, like, Tarantino fans that want to hang me at the stake.
Yeah. I mean, Django's really good, but Hateful Eight's my favorite, too, so I'd have to agree with you.
Watch Reservoir Dogs and American Gangster. Two movies all time. You'll thank me.
All right. My number one was, like, super sad. Like, probably the saddest movie moment that I've ever been a part of, and I saw Marley in Me. This is still sadder.
Okay.
This was See You Again at the end of Fast and Furious 7. Now I know you didn't see this because you stopped watching at 5, but car nerds like myself were still grieving the death of Paul Walker, and then just to see him drive off screen, like, I cried in the theater.
That's a good number one. I get it. If you're a fan and you see that, that definitely hits home for people.
I'll tell you, if you don't even like the series and just like him, just watch the end montage. It's one of the better ways to kill someone off script.
Did they hologram him? Was he like a hologram?
They had begun shooting, so they just kind of they had images that they could like manipulate. It's a lot.
It's crazy. All right, and my bonus one that most people won't know, it's Jane by Jefferson Starship. It's in Wet Hot American Teen Summer, the movie, and the show, and it also, trivia, yep.
Wet Hot American Teen Summer, is that different from Wet Hot American Summer?
No, I just added the teen, because for some reason when I was a kid, I thought there was a T in there. I think there is a T.
I love that movie, and the Netflix special.
They're fantastic. You know the song in the beginning of the Netflix special?
Yeah.
That used to be the Last Resort's opening song when the podcast first started.
Really? That had to have some licensing issues.
Well, that's why I took it off, and then I took off the other song as well. But no, that song, when I hear that song, I don't think I can get happier. Like, I know that Wet Hot American Summer's coming on, and I'm watching either the show or the movie. That was my bonus.
Did you like the show better or the movie better? And there is a right answer.
Well, the movie's classic, but the show is funnier.
Really? I thought the movie was funnier, too.
The show, dude, the movie, they're all 20 and 25 years old, so it's kind of like, ha, 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 but, like, they're only 5, 6 years old, and the characters are playing. In the series, they're all like 50-year-old people.
Yeah.
And like they're just like playing, like it's hilarious, bro. That concept to me was like mind blown. They had me hook, line, and sinker after the first 5 minutes.
They're both great. And they brought back a lot of the originals, which is like it wouldn't have worked otherwise.
There aren't a lot of great reunion scenes in movies, television, whatever, when they all just like show them hanging out as old guys and like they all that was such a good fuck yeah, man. Bring it back memories. All right. That does it for this week's episode of The Last Resort. Brandon, I had fun. Did you have a good time?
Honestly, we should just start doing a podcast of top fives.
I think that's our secret power. We have good opinions and we come up with good top fives. Well, I have good opinions.
Yeah, if you happen to survive the first 45 minutes of just pointless drivel, the end gets really good, I promise.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.